Hello.
Oh, hello, Merlin. How are you doing today?
Oh, hello, Dan. I'm doing quite well.
It's the show.
I'm the cock of the walk. I don't know how to speak French, right? I would try to say it in French.
No, we don't need French. We don't want to ruin the show.
Coke de la soirée. Coke de la soirée. That might be something from Top Chef. I'm not sure.
Coke. But you're good. You're doing good. You're fine.
I'm doing good and I'm doing well. You know what I'm saying? I'm like the Chubb group or something. Whoever said that. Somebody over MacArthur. Somebody says, we do well by doing good. It's one of those PBS companies. You know what I'm talking about.
No.
Chubb. Remember the Chubb group?
Chubbed up.
Chubb.
Oh, I'm going to put Chubb this. I went, yeah, listen, I wanted to, I'm going to make a sound and you tell me what this is. I don't know why I'm getting that stupid re-echoing thing. Doesn't matter. What does this sound like to you?
I can barely hear what you're doing. It sounds like a tapping.
Yeah, I found.
I don't. Because remember also Zoom. Sorry again, per the pre-flight, I'm talking down to you and I apologize.
No.
Zoom does. And I cannot get my dear friend John Roderick to understand this. Don't play guitar on a Zoom call. Like, Alex, do not play harmonica on a Zoom call. Because my hand to God, I thought Alex was gaslighting me. Because the ringing a bell, playing the harmonica, sometimes you just literally can't hear it. And if you can hear it, it's really not good.
Well, there's an option. There's an option. It's called Zoom back. This is good. And I think we leave this in because this is a helpful thing. There's an option.
This is what we're doing. This is why we have a show. This is part of work. And you're
this
getting
is back part of our jobs.
It's part of our remit, our portfolio. Talk to me.
In the Zoom audio settings, there is something that says Zoom.
What, the app or the website?
The app.
Okay.
There is something that says Zoom background noise removal, and it notes that it's recommended for most users, and then you can control the level of background noise
suppression.
Mine's
on medium. What's yours on?
Auto. But then right beneath it, there is something that says original sound for musicians, recommended for studio environments. And
wow.
I'm going to click that right now while we're doing the show.
Will it change while we're recording?
I don't know.
All right, I'm clicking it too. Original sound for musicians. What about my so?
Turn off, and now back, there's so, other things. It says display
echo cancellation, stereo audio, high fidelity music mode. Nah, we don't need that, do we?
High fidelity kind of sounds neat, and it says
well,
optimizes
everybody
it
out
for,
there. Oh, and you know what? Can I just point at the bald man behind the curtain here?
Yeah.
Which is that like so this started because we hear you and I hear you guys saying that the last few episodes have sounded a little weird and Dan and I are trying to figure out what's causing that. So that's why we're talking about audio quality.
Right.
And not wasting your time, but spending your time.
Now when
you've,
I did
you've
that
you've lent us your time and we're trying to make that a good investment.
When I did that and I closed preferences, it said there's a little text across the screen now that says original sound for musicians off.
So mine says that.
I clicked it and it switched to on.
Okay.
So it's on
noise
now.
Suppression is disabled. So, you know, we're gonna learn together. Dan and I are both musicians.
I don't
musicians.
Know what just happened, but I like it.
Dan was a Gibson man. I had cheaper guitars. I had an Epiphone, which is made by Gibson, and I had a Fender for a while. I had a Rickenbacker in college.
There is a while where the Epiphone Les Pauls were better than the Gibson Les Pauls. So I'm going to stand
by
that.
Hell yeah. Oh, don't get me started. My Epiphone was like under $300.
Right.
It's light. It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
It works. It's, you know. Them, you get you a Les Paul Custom, that's a, you're going to put some numbers on that board. You know what I'm saying? And it weighs a lot. Not as much as a PV, but a lot. So anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in. This has been Dan and Merlin's program, Back to Work, pound sign, productivity. I only have two small things
they're
prepared,
average.
But they're small. One's very small. One's log rolling. And one's follow-up from last time that I think is interesting to me. What do you got this week? What are you excited about? Bags, iPads, travel. What's on your mind? What's on your mind?
Yeah, man. I can do any of that. I can do all of that. I can do any of that.
Want me to do mine, and then you just get all the runway you want to tear ass?
Yeah, let's do it.
Or not. We could round robin it. We could do a snake draft. You ever do a snake draft?
Yeah, I mean, every night.
Yeah, I don't drink enough water.
Wait, how much do you drink?
A lot.
Like, give me an idea.
But not enough to have snakes every night.
What is a lot to you?
I get hot snakes sometimes.
What is a lot to you?
What is a lot?
Yeah.
I don't, it's not anything I measure or meter. The closest I could get is I can look at, for example, the big one is how much seltzer water I go through in a period of time, because that's my main water.
Yeah.
And listen, don't email me. Seltzer water is not mineral water. It's not hurting my bone density.
Oh, no.
Keeping your pants, France.
I read an article that said that seltzer water, not mineral water, but seltzer water is the same hydration effects as just plain water. So you can drink as much of that as you want, and you can fully substitute it for your regular water.
It's
all.
It's H2O.
The thing we could talk about that we did talk about once before, but it was so long ago, is that my son and I are now watching Chernobyl together.
Oh, boy. Boy.
And
I would love to talk about
that. We can talk about that.
My first thing is just a pure bit of log rolling. Long story short, I love making playlists. I like making playlists on YouTube. I like making playlists on, especially on Spotify, and which is my preferred streaming service. Discussing that is out of scope. Sorry. But I do love making playlists, especially on Spotify. Now, here's the thing. As much as I like about elements of the Spotify service, Dan, this is kind of like what we were saying about Skype before the call started. My bitches over the year have been with the Skype app and not with the Skype protocol and service. The protocol and service is great. Spotify's protocol and service is very good. The app, not great. The business, terrible.
Mm.
But, you know, it's you've got to find the service that works for you. Apple Music is just a non-starter for me. As anywhere I would dedicate a lot of time and like spend resources. Because guess what? The first 35 years of my life were spent learning to love music. And the rest of my life has been spent having Apple drain all of my interest in the time I used to put into curating a music collection. And don't even get me started on Siri. Oh my God. So, oh, you know what? I got the pop-up yesterday. I ask my phone to play something. What did I say? I think I said play the album Painted Shut by Hopalong. And I got the pop-up where you get to select a thing. You know?
The pop-up where you get to select a thing.
If you try this on your phone, request an album, say play Led Zeppelin 3, and I get a pop-up. And I've gotten this before when it was in beta, but this is the first time in, you know, production that I've seen this. And, you know, it doesn't really matter. But the point is, you get that cool pop-up where it's like the whole screen in one of those janky-ass iOS screens, it's like 11 different streaming services. And so when you say play Led Zeppelin 3, it pops up. And the first, what do you want me to play this in? I think the first one is understandably Apple Music. And then Spotify's down there somewhere, right? But if you wanted to listen to, I think I might have done a screenshot. Tidal, yeah, I think I did do a screenshot. Because, you know, for my work, when I got the pop-up, it said Apple Music, Apple Pod. So what I had said was play the album Something Else by the Kinks.
Right. That and seems like said, a fair request to ask of your phone. That seems fair.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, just because I get very frustrated with these things because I use them. A lot of you who aren't frustrated with this are just not using it enough. Because if you say something,
right? If you don't hate it the way I do, you just haven't tried hard.
Forgive my monthly recitation. Every Apple product works fine as long as you don't really use it for anything. It looks great in a box, but so like on my TV, I use Siri a lot. I use Siri for, and if you don't know what these things are,
You're grabbing the remote control, and you're holding down the little side
button.
Or
yelling into the air, because my HomePods get it too.
And you're like, who was that? And Siri will like, oh, that was Harrison Ford, or whatever.
Yeah, kind of.
Like that?
Yeah, I mean, the one that I use the most, I mean, I've said before that one of my biggest uses of Siri on my phone and elsewhere is, hey, dingus, remind me to take out the trash when I arrive at the house in 1 hour. And the reason for doing that is that means if you get to the house before it's an hour, you get the reminder. If you get to an hour before you get to the house, you get the reminder. It's nice to have both, right? That works a treat for me. You know, remind me that my IKEA SCADIS display case is done printing in 3.5 hours or whatever, right? That's great. The analogous thing, the thing that I use that often, and we're talking like order of magnitude probably, on Apple TV, because I watch so much YouTube, So Dingus, find Dune 1984 trailer on YouTube. And that actually does work really well. I use that a lot. But if anybody follows me on the internet, you'll see when I post these insane screenshots of what Siri's trying to do or thinks I want or refuses to do on Apple TV. Like, if you want to listen to the Jeff Rosenstock album, I Look Like Shit, it goes, oh, you and your whore mouth or whatever. It makes a joke because it doesn't understand, like, there's stuff in the world that's like that, whether or not Cupertino likes it, like, that's what the thing is called. You drive yourself crazy with this. Last night I drove myself crazy with, I was listening to Dr. Feelgood, and I love the guitar player from Dr. Feelgood, whose name is Wilco Johnson. And an interesting thing, Wilco Johnson, very fascinating guy. I'll put a link to my favorite song of theirs in notes, Dr. Feelgood. They're a pub rock band from the mid-70s. But later on in life, that guy Wilco Johnson would go on to play a really cool, interesting character in Game of Thrones, Sir Ilan Payne. So, like, the guy when, Blackwater. I watched Blackwater last night. And, like, the one where, like, he's guarding all the girls, the women and the children with his giant sword, that's Wilco Johnson from the band Dr. Feelgood. So I says, I kind of want to watch Blackwater again. I think it's one of the five best episodes, action-wise, of the show. And so I said something like, I usually start with, when I'm doing Siri, and I'll be done with this eventually, I'll say, start with something usually very specific, just because I know what I want. And I'll say, and most times, honestly, I do hold up the remote and say this. And I say, find the Game of Thrones episode Blackwater. And it doesn't understand. It says, I'm sorry, I don't understand. I say, okay, find, you can do, you know, you see this in demos, like find movies by Chevy Chase, just the good ones, that kind of stuff. But I'm really struggling with it. And finally, the way I think I got it to come up was find Game of Thrones season 2, episode 9. And it did successfully pull that straight up. And there's stupid Joffrey's face in my HBO Max. Like that works okay. Quick lightning round. But like, it's not dependable. Finding, like, oh, search for this string on YouTube is pretty, that works pretty well. Some other things that I say often, one that you can, a lot of people know this, but just so you know, subtitles on. Hey, Dingus, subtitles on. Hey, Dingus, subtitles off. Depending, there are apps where that doesn't work. But if they're using a pretty standard player and it's a pretty basic app, like, it'll do that for you. Classic great one that I wish always worked everywhere. Hey, Dingus, what did she just say? And which sounds like a Michael Scott joke. And what that will do is, whether or not you have subtitles on at the moment, it will rewind a few seconds and turn on subtitles and replay.
I was going to say it jumps seconds. Back, like a few seconds back, so you didn't miss it, what you
it's
did, right?
It's really great when it works. And just the quick pivot before I close is that, and yeah, if you've got HomePods set up as your speakers, or just if you're in, I don't know how exactly this works, but there is some sense in the world of Siri and, I don't know, HomeKit, HomePod, there is some sense of, like, if you say to somebody, hey, Siri, pause. Sorry, I'm so sorry, you guys. If you say, hey, Dingus, pause, or hey, Dingus, stop, and they do mean different things, right? There's a pretty good chance it'll know that something is playing on a HomePod in the kitchen, and it'll pause that. You'll hear, like, pausing all audio and blah, blah, and, you know, Google does a similar thing. But again, not super dependable. But you can yell into the air all of these. You can yell those requests. One that obviously you've got to learn and love is just yelling into the air, hey, Dingus, pause. Because, you know, for something as simple as I just want to take a leak, I oughtn't have to go, like, find the remote. But then the place, so on top of the frustration of Siri frequently refusing to do anything useful, even though it knows what to do, one of my top three things is, hey, Dingus, play from the beginning. And which sounds like, how often would you use that? But, like, it's frustrating. If I was watching, you know, an hour into Watchmen, the movie, yeah, and you open it up, a good app will say, do you want to start from the beginning or do you want to pick up where you left off? Other ones just pick up where you left off always, which, as you know, as a tastemaker in the house, it bums you out when, like, you left at the end of an amazing scene in a movie and that's the first thing your kid sees is something 2 hours into the movie.
Oh, yeah.
But what's, it's frustrating.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't even thought about that, but you're totally right. It's like a spoiler, an unintentional spoiler.
And some apps are better than others, and other apps, mothers. But you know, HBO is actually pretty good about that. But, you know, but it's, I do it all the time. And there's YouTube videos. Like the song I was singing when we started recording is a song, I'll put it, Notes, Tiny Moves by Jack Antonoff, or Bleachers, his band Bleachers, which I watch and listen to constantly because it's got Margaret Qualley dancing for 4 minutes. And it's terrific. But like because sometimes YouTube gets, if it's a long video, if it's like a World War II video that's 4 hours long and I'm 2 hours in, it'll start playing at the right place. A lot of times it will just start at the beginning, but here's what happens. And this pulls it all together in terms of frustration. That wonderful thing where you hold up the remote, you hit the side button, you say play from the beginning. I have gotten to a point in life now, it's so useful to me, but I say it so prayerfully. I say, play from the beginning. In the way that we used to like talk to like Alexa before we learned better. Like, oh, yeah. You know, like you're over enunciating like you're freaking like Rex Harrison or something. But here's what happens. If Siri misinterprets what you said, and I got the receipts, as the youth say, I got so many screenshots for this. If it misunderstands what you say, I say, play from the beginning, which sometimes I would just say start at the beginning. Because if I say play from the beginning and it misunderstands what I want it to do, it falls back. Anytime it doesn't understand something involving play, it seems to me, it falls back on selecting something it thinks matches what you want from Apple Music. And it's almost always some insane trap song. Or like, you know, some crazy rap song, rap. But it'll say, okay, you know, so I'll say, you know, play this nice Margaret Qualley video, play that from the beginning. And they'll go, now playing The Beginning by Biscuit Slice. The Beginning. I'm like, ah! Pause. Stop. Which is not a good user experience. And what's the problem with all that, Dan? It makes you trust the system less, which was Siri's original problem to begin with.
Right.
And
yes.
And like, say what you will about ChatGPT and OpenAI, and I know everybody's very sad about all those things, but once you really start spending some time with an above average LLM, Siri seems like about the goddamn dumbest thing in the world. I know they're working on it. I know, Dob. I know. I don't care. They've had years to work on this. And it's just nuts that I ask for something pretty straightforward that I think is a pretty straightforward thing to ask. Like, you know, I'm a word guy. And so sometimes I'll say, like, what's the temperature outside? Now, understand, you can also say things like, just why would you say that? You can say, what's the temperature? What's the weather? Well, I don't want all the weather. What I want to know is the air temperature outside the place where I am. Usually the place where I live. So I will say something like, hey, Dingus, what's the outside air temperature? Because remember, you can also say, what's the temperature in the bathroom? What's the temperature in the garage? If you have smart devices, oh, who would want that? Apple wants you to buy all this shit so that you'll ask it questions. And then when you do, it says something like, here's some information I found on the web. Continue on your phone. And you're like, you're not even like making it up like ChatGPT does. You're not like, even trying.
No, like the other day, and I have a Google Nest Hub in my kitchen. And I will ask it things like, what is the proper temperature to cook pork or whatever it is? Which, you know, you know it's 145, but you just kind of want someone to tell you it's 145.
Isn't another one just really dumb stuff? Like I was just making, it doesn't matter what I was making, but I tend to like that idea of like when you do a recipe, if you can get it in weight rather than volume, it's a good thing. Yeah. So I'm frequently yelling out stuff. Like I want to make double the amount of wild rice. And I say, because I don't want to do the math. And I go like, what's 1.75 times 2 in 1.75 cups times 2 in milliliters?
Yell that out. Half the time.
Which seems like, oh my God. I mean, if you do that in Spotlight on your Mac, you know, you can do that, just so y'all know, you can do your calculator right through Spotlight on your Mac. So you could say November 26, 1966 through today in hours. and it'll calculate that. I'm pretty sure that's the kind of thing that that Spotlight Siri adjacent thing gets. But the real, it's crazy now where like it seems to, it's gotten way better at hearing something. I don't think it's gotten better at hearing what you said. And these are all different things, by the way, guys. Hearing something, well, great. Like if somebody revs their engine, does Siri go off? Well, no, idiot. Okay. Well, how often have you yelled something at Siri and it didn't hear you? Or it hears you on the wrong device? Whatever. So it hears you. Did it hear what you said? It seems to have heard what I said. And maybe if you get lucky, it hears what you said seemingly flawlessly, but it may not understand what it's supposed to do with that information. And like, it seems to me that given the subset of whatever Siri-ish, ML-ish things that all these voice things are capable of, it feels like a massive regression over the last few years.
No, it really does. How often? It really
does. And I can't decide, Dan, if it's just because of ChatGPT, where I've really gotten used to going in. Oh, like
ChatGPT is so good that everything else seems worse, even though it might not be.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of temporarily over arguing with people about this. ChatGPT just makes words. It's all input. It doesn't know how to do math. Okay, fine. I wanted to make my own homemade.
So I think I heard that because we did that Zoom modification.
Yeah.
But what I was gonna, just to add to your point, I don't want to interrupt you, but
no, please.
50% of the time when I say, what is the proper temperature to cook pork? It'll say 145 degrees. The other 50% of the time, here's what I found on the web.
I know.
Like, this is an easy question. Yeah. This is not a hard, this is something that should just be able to tell you.
Of course, again, with
ChatGPT,
that
you.
Could be different every time. And that's why if it's something I care about, I Google it first and then I'll ChatGPT it. But like, I wanted to make this stuff. It's called, it doesn't matter. You don't have to like this. I print 3D things. I like to do things to them. And one of them is I'm learning how to do patinas and fake rust using metal paints. And I blew through the amount of, it's called a rust activator. Title. I ran through all of my rust activator really quickly trying to rust John Syracuse's large head. And so I wanted to learn how to make my own. And so I went into ChatGPT. But long story short, this is the kind of thing where like I just, all y'all who thinks that this thing is the devil are really missing out. Hey, give me a recipe for rust activator. I might try that several different times in several different threads. And, you know, I might test different ones and so forth. But here's the thing. It goes in and it says to make rust activator, you need hydrogen peroxide. I'm doing this off the dome. Because I've done this a lot lately. You need hydrogen peroxide, distilled white vinegar, table salt, and sometimes it says water. And depending on the recipe you get from that, they're all pretty much that same, those same ingredients. There's some recipes where it's like 3-to-1 hydrogen peroxide to vinegar. There's some where it's 1-to-1. I've discovered that having more hydrogen peroxide is good. But once I had figured that part of it out by thinking and doing my own due diligence, you know what I was able to say? Using this formula you just provided me, consider that I am using 3% concentration hydrogen peroxide and understand that I want a yield of 500 milliliters. Give me all the measurements for this in metric. Why? Because I don't want to do tablespoons of salt. I want to use a scale and measure the right amount. I want exactly 40 grams of salt. I want, and then I'm going to want, you know, 400 milliliters of hydrogen peroxide, 50 milliliters of vinegar, and it works a treat. But do you follow what I'm saying there? Like it's connecting. Do you remember Yahoo Pipes back in the day? That remarkable thing where you could say, it's almost like a roll your own API where you could say from this website, grab this thing and do this thing and go through it like a pipe, like, you know, in Perl, mm-hmm. like go through this thing and route this and treat it like a greater than or a less than or a pipe or a whatever, you know? And that's what I love about this. And I don't know, to me, to use a phrase my late grandfather used, close enough for government work. If I can avoid having to do, if I can, in the same way that a developer will create, I don't know what the term for it is, like a library, something where you're going to repurpose a bit of code that you use a lot, the same way that Ghost, the app, the web service, lets you create snippets, like a text expander. If there's stuff I want to use more than once, let me tell you the kind of thing I want you to do and then be able to return to it. I do this all the time. Hey, earlier in this thread, I asked you to do a thing with this text file. Here's a new version of that text file. Do that same thing you did before. I don't have to re-enter all the instructions. and it knows to spit it out as a markdown table when it's done. I'm not asking it what my purpose in life is. I'm not asking it if I chose my mate well. That's out of scope for what I want out of an LLM, and I hope it's out of scope for what you want from an LLM. If you want facts, go somewhere where there's facts. But it does a pretty good job of telling me how to make something rust. And it does it faster than me doing it on my own. And why would I not? And there's not really any huge downside to me getting it wrong. It's not the Cuban Missile Crisis. So why wouldn't I do that? But having said that, and again, I will seed you because I can already hear John Syracuse saying this. It doesn't actually know things. I know it doesn't actually know things. But somehow it's coming up with something that does help me. And, you know, like I say, it's not life-changing decisions and it's fast. But with all that said, all those rejoiners, all those provisos, all those little miniature Syracuses, all of those things, even keeping that in mind, it's crazy to me how much stuff, especially SIRI, has no idea what to deal with. It's just, given the modest number of things it's capable of doing, it's weird that it gets so confused in a quiet room.
Mm.
Google does sometimes, but Google will be able to often tell you how tall somebody is. Google can tell you when somebody's born. I'm just telling you, like, asking your dingus what the temperature is outside shouldn't require picking up your phone and going to a web page. There's something crappy about that implementation. And I don't know. So are you totally off using Siri for things mostly?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't really.
But hasn't it gotten worse? Is like, just to get my back. It was sucked, and then it got better, and then it kept getting better. And at a certain point, it just feels like it got stuck. And that's frustrating to me, especially when my dumb world-ending LLM is able to help me in ways that I would really hope Apple would be able to help me. I know it's coming, you guys, but I'll believe it when I see it. And I'll believe it when I can do the stuff with LLM-inflected Apple stuff. If I can do the stuff I want in the way that I want, I will believe it when I see it. But if it doesn't want to play Jeff Rosenstock's I Look Like Shit, I don't know how much I want to invest my effort in repeatedly using this thing if it really is just faster to use the light switch.
You know, I think that when it comes to the decline or the perceived decline of Siri, I just don't understand what the issue is. Here's the thing. Like, one of the things I was talking to some people on Threads about not that long ago was, you know, why, if I already have a nice speaker system, and I do, I got the Sonos, why would I get, and even if I didn't, and I was making a decision as to which one I wanted to get, why would I get the, why would I get the Apple?
A big HomePod.
Like, why would I do that? Or even get the little ones? And people were saying, well, you know, if you have the little one, then you can just shout whatever you want into the air and it will hear it. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, that's a good thing. But it's very rare when my phone is not nearby or an iPad is not nearby or a computer is not nearby or I'm not wearing my Apple Watch. I wear that sometimes. I don't sometimes, but there's almost always an Apple device within earshot.
Well, especially if you have Raise to Speak turned on. I personally am habituated fully to pressing the digital crown because I know it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something drives me slightly crazy. I do an unconscious mental calculation of how many minutes of my life are lost waiting for to see if my watch hears me. But if you know, raise, is that what it's called? Lift to Speak or Raise to Speak?
Yeah, Raise to Speak, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So if it notices a change in axis and it's like up near your face, like, and you start talking, what's the temperature outside? Got it.
So why would I ever get a HomePod?
55 degrees.
Nice.
Huh?
I was saying, why would I ever need, you know, one of these pods?
It's not a solution to a problem you have.
No, right? It doesn't help with anything. And, you know, I feel like that what I want is I want ChatGPT to replace Siri on all of these devices.
Well, you know all the buzz about this, right?
I know.
It's all right around the corner.
I know.
All the shovel blogs are reporting on rumors about how all that's coming. They're buying lots of companies. They're doing lots. And that's all well and good, you guys. But this is not a new problem. And more saliently today, and I want you to listen closely, what I'm saying today is Apple's business, we used to talk about, is it a tech reason? Is it a, like, you know, like when you think about why something's impossible, I think it is useful to ask yourself, and sometimes you even say this to somebody that you're close to, well, is that a rule, a tradition, a technical constraint? Like when you say you can't do something, tell me why you can't do it. And I'll listen and take you in good faith. But like Apple, there's a lot of stuff Apple stuff won't and can't do because of a business decision, right? When I say business decision, that could be about money, but it's also, if it doesn't, if it chooses, I should find, you know what? I'll find you a few of these good ones. Cause when you, are you going to tell me about something you like this week?
Yeah, I have two things.
Okay. All right. But I'll find some examples of funny Siri responses just cause I realize I sound like a crazy old man, but you know, when you lose that trust in it, you have an expectation of what it should be able to do. And a problem for Apple, I feel like, is when, and this is, gosh, there's a wonderful episode. I'm going to write this down. Wonderful episode of Under the Radar this week where Underscore and Marco talk about the numbers on Vision Pro. And like, spoilers, like David Underscore Smith, who makes some pretty popular apps, there's things where he's seeing like 50 downloads a day. There's things where he's seeing like 500 daily users on an app, which, so what he did was he did a thing that I do stuff like this too, back when I used to make money at things, where he'll say like, okay, you have this many hours in a year to work. Given these numbers right now, all other things being equal, given the amount of time I have to work in a year, how much time should I spend on Apple Vision Pro based on the current usage, right? Which is over 2,000 hours a year, 2,080 hours or something a year, right? Mm-hmm. And you know what the answer was?
What?
Based on his current numbers?
What?
8 minutes.
Really?
8 minutes of the entire year should be spent. Craig Hockenberry just said the same thing. People are always asking us to do this and that with support. And Craig comes back at him and says, would you pay $100 for that? Because the problem is, even if we charged you $100 for this, we still would not earn back what it costs to make this.
Right.
And the addressable market just isn't, you know, there yet. But with, there's just so much stuff where like with Apple, like, gosh, you did the Vision Pro thing. My whole, one of my overriding thoughts throughout the run up to Apple Vision Pro was, I really hope in my heart of hearts that this is also an opportunity where they show huge improvements with Siri. Because, you know, once then once, and they didn't. So Apple Vision Pro came out. And of course, you got all the usual stuff that you would expect. Let's talk about input devices. Like your hands kind of work for things, but you know, there's limited amounts of things that you can do. And the virtual keyboard is a joke. And honestly, do you want to have to use a virtual or real keyboard on an AR helmet? I mean, I would certainly prefer not to. Well, do you have anything that could do stuff for me without typing and clicking? You sure do. It's called Siri, and it's very poorly documented, and it's increasingly undependable. And I really think, like, it's hard for me, I don't want to overstate this, but I did get a demo. I've done the Apple Vision Pro. It's cool. But like, it's, everybody seems to be saying the same thing, which is to hold two ideas in your head at once. This is an absolutely incredible technological achievement. And I almost never use it. That seems to be, from Joanna Stern through David Smith, that seems to be what's happening. As much as I love it, there's just not that much that I can do on this. But if you want to see growth in that, and I know they're supply constrained and they're weird about, they didn't release stuff to developers before. That was stupid. But if they want this thing to grow, it would sure be nice if along with Apple Vision Pro improvements comes Siri improvements. Because wouldn't you like to be able to, I mean, you ever like have trouble, like there's this band I was getting into and I think they're called Always, but it's A-L-V-V-A-Y-S, or the band Churches, C-H-V-R-C-H-E-S. Now, I'll bet you if I said play the band Churches, it would figure it out. But sometimes you have to spell stuff, and it's frustrating when it doesn't get it right and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes.
But imagine if the ease with which I can say to remind me to do something, I can yell that into the air, remind me to take out the trash when I arrive at the house in 1 hour. There's so much stuff where you're not going to need a lot of, unless you're doing stuff on the web with typing. Think about how much stuff you could control with your voice on Apple Vision Pro. But then the corollary is, okay, this thing's $3,500. It does four things well. You don't need any of them. And on top of it, if you do want to even see if this could be good for your work, yeah, you're going to need input devices for that. Which is like, okay, well, it sounds like this isn't really ready yet. Because that thing, if Siri was as good as in my head it should be by it now, there'd be no question that there's belief. You know, if it were Steve Jobs, Steve Jobs would be up to say, and believe me, there's all kinds of things you can get for Apple Vision Pro, but you don't need any of them. You just put this thing on, it's plugged in, and once it's set up, you just tell it what to do. That's what I imagine anyway. Mm-hmm. But so I hope there's changes to that stuff. But I think it's not good for Apple when people, oh, I'm heavily projecting here. When somebody like me who's an enthusiast, like I really like this stuff and I'm patient with this stuff and I will try it again and again and I will take notes. Mm-hmm. Like not to be mean, but to go like, oh, that's interesting. That worked, this worked better than that, you know? The only nearly complete list of everything you can do with your voice on Siri is something I found on GitHub. You can find only kind of the most general things about that in a knowledge base article. But I have not found an exact, and I don't mean like every single verb, but like at least like show us everything this can do. And then editorialize it. Turn it into like, here's stuff to do while you're cooking. Here's stuff to do while you're watching a movie. Here's stuff that's going to be really handy around bedtime. Hey, did you know that you can make a shortcut? I'm being Apple here. If I were Apple, I would be saying this. For you nerds out there, did you know, and I've done this, you can create a shortcut that will change the brightness on your phone, turn off the clicking sounds, lower the screen brightness, and set a 50-minute countdown timer to stop playing, and then play the thing that you want. You could do all of that with interaction. You could do all of that. And wouldn't it be nice, as you're getting ready, you're taking a leak before you go to bed, to pick up your phone and go night-night. And night-night doesn't just mean turn off all the lights. It means follow my instructions for what going to bed means. Is that really that crazy? It's starting to feel like self-driving cars. We're like 5 years ago, we thought it was tomorrow.
Yeah.
And now today it feels like 15 years away. It's frustrating. Did we close the... Oh, yeah. So anyway, the log rolling that this all started with 37 minutes ago is I like making playlists. I like doing it. And Spotify, unfortunately, doesn't... If you go and land on my Spotify profile, I don't think you can even see these playlists. I've gone like not logged in on a different browser. It's garbage. So I went in and at the request of a listener, thank you so much, to Phil.
Phil.
I went in and I copy-pasted and I made a web page that links to a series I love, which is called Gentle Introductions. And these are collections where I try to get somebody enthused about a band or an artist with exactly 7 and only 7 songs. And it's in show notes for this episode. Dan, where would people find show notes for episode 643 of your Back to Work program?
Oh, you can go to backtowork.limo/643. And that is where all of these notes that Merlin has curated for you will appear.
So thoughtfully put together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got to find Dr. Feelgood. I got to find Siri Talk Voice Assistant. What is that? Oh, boy, my notes here are not good. Oh, I was also, you know, it's funny, or I was all finding some funny Siri photos. Dan, would you please tell me about something you like?
Oh, yeah, man. I would love to tell you about our first sponsor today. It is Shopify.
Shopify!
What do you say about Shopify? This is a company that really does it all when it comes to helping you sell stuff online. They help you sell stuff at every stage of your business. So if you're at the idea stage and you think maybe someone wants to buy this t-shirt or this mug or this thing I made, yeah, you can do that with them. And then all the way to that advanced stage, like we just hit 1 million orders, they're there to help you grow. And of course, at that stage, you know, you really do need help, because you know, like, who doesn't want to sell 1 million things?
I do. I want to sell 1 million.
I think I've told this story before that, you know, the biggest success story I ever had with Shopify was the day after the Super Bowl when the Eagles won.
Oh, yeah, your Eagles.
Yeah, the next morning I woke up and I thought, I'll make a t-shirt to commemorate this. And I thought we might sell 100 of them maybe. And I put it out there and tweeted it, and it was a fun design. And somehow it wound up on a message board that wound up in front of
It got passed around amongst living Eagles fans.
Yeah, and the guys who host the NFL Eagles show in Philadelphia the next day picked it up, and they started talking about it, and then all of a sudden the orders came in like crazy. What was interesting about that is I had to kind of shift. I had a buddy who does like small batch screen printing. And he was just going to like do it in his garage for me, because I thought I'd have 50 shirts, and like, I'll bring, you know, I'll get some pizza and we'll do it. And it turned out that I had sold thousands of these things. And so I had to shift to like a full-on fulfillment company. But with Shopify, it was a piece of cake to do that because everybody supports Shopify. And so to integrate with their systems to get these thousands of orders out, all I had to do was like click a button and it integrated with their stuff. And all of a sudden, it was no big deal. And that's what makes Shopify really great, is not just the really cool interface and the fact that you can create your own websites that look like your own websites if you want them to, or just use their templates, but it actually integrates with everything and everyone supports it. And they support every kind of shipping option in the whole world. And they, you know, like it really is awesome. And it gives the user who's buying stuff from you the ability to like customize it. No, here's how I want it shipped. And they can do that. Here's how many quantity it manages the shopping cart. Like all of the stuff that's a nightmare and a headache to do that takes you away from focusing on the cool thing that you just made that you want to sell, they take care of all of that stuff. And it really, really, really is a great system. I've used it so many times over the years, all the like old 5x5 stuff and like the Bacon Method stuff. All of that was Shopify, and I never even considered using anything else. So,
man, I love Shopify. Damn, where can people get rolling with the Shopify?
Well, if they're ready to get rolling, I should also mention, I don't have to mention this, but I just want to mention it. 10% of all e-commerce in the United States is powered by Shopify, and they are behind companies like Allbirds, Rothy's,
Brooklinen's. They're a juggernaut is what you're saying, a juggernaut.
175 countries. Okay. That's all in. Next time we get them as a sponsor, I'm going to say, brought to you by Shopify, 175 countries, out. And that's it.
That's all you need to say.
So they
and
have...
And then a link where people go.
Yeah, I'll give you a link, okay?
That's free, yeah.
For $1 per month trial period, you can go to shopify.com/backtowork, all lowercase. They want me to say all lowercase. Like, this is important. It has to be lowercase. So go to shopify.com/backtowork. Go there. You're going to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. It's going to be $1 per month trial period, which is amazing. Shopify.com/backtowork. Go check them out. Thanks very much, Shopify, for making this show possible. Shopify cha-ching sound.
Shopify cha-cha-cha. Let's see. Well, here's one. This is actually
did you like my special effect for the Shopify cha-ching sound?
It's fine. Here's some various ones. Let's see. Okay, there's a TV show on Hulu called Pen 15 and PEN15, which, you know, they're having fun with it because it's about girls in middle school played by 30-year-old women. But right, it does look like the word penis. I said, find the TV show Pen 15. And you know what my Apple TV said? I said, find the show Pen 15. And it said, sorry, Apple Cash isn't available here. Christmas Eve, there's a movie we like to watch. And so I got real ballsy about it and just said the name of the movie. Because usually I'm doing that weird Kenning where I'm like, find the episode of blah, blah from the blah, blah. And I'm giving it all the cues. In this case, I just said Die Hard. You know what it said? I said Die Hard. Well, I mean, like, how else would you use this?
No, it's Christmas good. Eve? I'm curious to hear what it...
last minute gift ideas on Apple Cash. I said Die Hard, and it says, if you think it could be serious, ask me to call emergency services or someone you trust. I said, find, you know, there's a band I like called New Pornographers. I said, find the New Pornographers on YouTube. And it said, I don't have an answer for that. But, okay, so the Apple Cash, that might be my favorite, but this one's up there. Find the movie The Right Stuff, Dan, is what I said. I said, find the movie The Right Stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what it said? Mm. I said, find the movie The Right Stuff. And it said, should I turn it on or off? and what I said to my friends about
how do you
that
remember
was,
all these? Do you make notes of what it said?
These are all just screenshots. I try to document these. And so, like I shared with some friends of mine, what my thought was confused and you know varied because on the one hand I was fascinated to answer this, but terrified with what the results might be. Who knows? I might have some kind of Finn and Jake portal, you know, into a time world, and maybe that would undo, you know, Stanley Kubrick's Space Landing. I don't know. It's a good movie, though, The Right Stuff. It's got Scott Glenn. It's got Lance Henriksen, you know.
Is that the one where you get to see them doing the testing, the different
kinds? Yes.
Yeah, I like that segment.
It starts with, you know, the early parts of the program. Oh God, Sam Shepard's so good in this movie. Yeah, anyway, that's enough of that. So my log rolling is follow that link in notes if you want some of my gentle, and the gentle introductions, like I say, seven songs to get you excited about Ted Leo, The Police, old 97s, stuff like that. That's my main log rolling. I have one more very quick thing. And Dan, I've already prepared an infographic for this that's in show notes for this episode of your program. I went off on a very interesting and useful Jeremiah ad at the end of our last episode, where I kind of went off, King, about a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that got me there was talking about how I have such confidence in my system for using tags and context in things. So I disambiguate context and tags by having each one start with a unique letter. And whenever we recorded last, it might have been 2 weeks ago, but whenever we recorded that episode, the point is, I said, I'll bet you I could go in and change office to O, change house to H, errands to E, et cetera.
Yeah.
I said, I have such, you know, unearned confidence in my system that I bet I could do that. And I sent you an image of my first cut at that. You know what? I did it, and it's been fantastic. So, I mean, it isn't like, because, you know, it's whenever you search for something in anything halfway decent, it's showing your results as you type, and it's showing you the best match. Well, guess what? If you type the letter H and there's something that exactly matches the string H, that's going to show up better and faster without regard to any other algorithm that, you know, for sorting and how often you use it. It's just going to find H really fast. It's going to find O really fast. I know this is not for everybody, but I just wanted to do an added spike of the ball here to the fact that this actually did work and it's working great. Now you use things, right?
I do, yes.
And do you use things on a Mac?
Yes.
Okay, well, here's a neat thing. There's a lot to this app you kind of got to adjust yourself to, but it's pretty great. Like, one thing that I like a lot is it's got, you know, command 1, 2, 3, et cetera. That will take you to the, like, high-level sections. Like, 1 takes you to inbox, and 2 takes you to, I think, today, et cetera. But, you know, what's neat, you know, you can at any point, you can always hit command F, start typing, and it'll find all matches for tags or projects or tasks, right? So if you know somewhere in your big collection of stuff to do, you've got like dry cleaner, like you could go and type and hit command F and then start typing dry and that'll show up. That's pretty great, right?
Yeah.
Did you know
really
you
good.
Don't even need to hit command F?
What are you talking about?
So are you on a Macintosh computer right now?
I am right now.
Could you open the app things?
Yes.
So in things, let's just click on inbox.
I'm in there.
And I mean, what's a good string? Just start typing letters without hitting any keys. Like type A.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So what Dan's experiencing right now is there's no, you don't have to.
How long has that been like that?
How long did I not know that you don't even need to hit command F? It's
a little bit
Gmail-like. I wish this thing handled escape differently, because I'm still addicted to escape for getting in and out of tasks in OmniFocus. But anyway, good to know. And boy, do you see how that really works with my system? I'm anywhere in this app. I type the letter, and if I'm not focal in like typing in a field, I hit O and enter, and it opens up everything that can be done in my office. So that's my victory dance.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's like next level. I use, you know how in like VS Code, you can do command P and you can just start typing
shift P.
File names.
And command shift P or command K in so many apps. Descript has that. I call it an everything button. It's just the best. Right? That's what you're talking about, right?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And I love little shortcuts.
And it shows you, like, what is it? Is it most, it's not most used, it's most recently used? Because my most recently used is almost always clean up markdown formatting, you know? So that's always like the top one, but that must be so handy. And will it also find things like, again, forgive my lack of knowledge, but libraries or things you're looking for in all of your code? Will it also find .h's and stuff in your code?
I think it'll find everything. I think it finds anything but, you
so
want
it's like, to. I mean, it is it's an IDE, right? I mean,
yeah.
Like it's...
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like it. It looks like a text editor, but it does do all those other things.
But like, as with BB Edit, like, depending on what you have turned on, mm-hmm. you can go crazy with like autocomplete stuff where it's really like using HomeSite or my beloved HomeSite from back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the extent of what I've got. I'm still mad at voice assistants. I'm still mad at voice assistants. I love all of you people, but I get frustrated about that. I have a list of playlists. It's a meta list, and you will love it, please. And then what was my other one? Oh, yeah, I was just celebrating. I was patting myself on the context about that other thing. And with that, I would love to throw to you, Dan. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
It's the usual. It's the usual stuff. And, you know, I don't know what you want to talk about. I'm open to talk about anything. Oh. Anything you want to talk about, I could do it.
Well, do you have, I mean, like there's a lot of interest? Apple going, things that about? Other people talk about that we don't talk about. What do you have any thoughts about the big DOJ? That boring? That's probably boring, right?
No, I mean, yes and no.
That, I mean, we could talk. Oh no, sorry. We're going to talk about, screw that. Go listen to ATP. No, do you want to talk about Chernobyl?
We can definitely talk about Chernobyl. There,
do you have one more thing to tell me about that you like, or you want to wait a few minutes?
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you about it now. Just clear out the pipes.
Mm.
I would like to tell you about something called LinkedIn Sales Navigator.
LinkedIn Sales Navigator.
I mean, it's our favorite. It is our favorite. This is a sales intelligence platform. It helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Merlin, don't you want to target the right buyers?
Yes.
I not only want
to target the right buyers, I want to literally exclude the wrong buyers. I don't want them. I will IP ban
that's
them.
That's right. There is a term.
Fully qualified leads. Listen closely.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah. There I would love
a,
that.
There's from a term I'm going to throw at you.
And my major business points.
That I don't even know papers, if you know this term. Have you ever heard the term hidden allies?
I don't think I know that. And if I did, I'd still love to learn it again.
This is something that LinkedIn Sales Navigator is going to do. It's going to show you
your qualification. Are they figuring out who's worthy?
It's like when you have like a sleeper cell or a Manchurian candidate or something like that. And what you do, I'm assuming this is what this means. I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, okay.
Okay. This is my assumption.
It's a little different. Yeah.
But what you do is you say you have I'm thinking that, again, you're going to have to experience LinkedIn Sales Navigator for yourself. This is what I think happens. Mm-hmm. They give you a code word. And so when you're in, you're talking to the person.
What are you talking about?
No, listen.
They give you a code word.
They give you a code. This is what I think happens. Okay. Give you a code word. And so when you're you're talking to one of these people and you want to see if they're a hidden ally, right? You can drop a word just casually into the sentence and it's it triggers them. So for example, you might be sitting there.
Oh, you mean with Bucky where you read him the words in Winter Soldier?
Yes.
Yeah, I get it.
Like that. So let's say you're a hidden ally and I don't know that and you're hidden.
Oh,
and you and I are just talking and I just casually say, and I want to tell you a little bit more about our products, different features and actually Metroplex. And you,
I would say Vatican cameos, and that's how hit the dirt. Yeah,
this is what I'm thinking. This does. I'm not positive.
Okay, that's probably what it does, and I already feel like it's a very desirable trait in an app.
No, you want service. This. Everyone should have LinkedIn Sales Navigator. So fueled
What's
by
it called?
LinkedIn
Hidden friends. What did you call it?
Hidden allies.
Okay.
Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion. I didn't know LinkedIn had 1 billion people on it.
It's a lot of people.
That's almost the whole Earth. The Sales Navigator, it's going to give you the most up-to-date first-party data that enables you to unlock conversations with people that matter, some of whom are probably hidden allies. So right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator, find your hidden allies, and you will get a 60-day, usually they'll give you a 6-day. And you're like, fine, 6 days, that's 6 more than nothing. This
it's
is 60 days.
It's got an urgency to it that 8 doesn't have.
It's like,
week,
I don't even
you
know.
You do the rounding error thing in your head. This is why they have speed limit signs that say 19 miles per hour. They don't want you to process it as just another string that ends with a zero. In that case, you say, hey, you got 6 days, tick tock. by this day next week, you better already be finding your closet friends. What's it called? Hidden figures?
hidden allies.
Vatican cameo, Stan, hit the dirt.
Here's a really cool thing, okay? If you want to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator now, start finding hidden allies. 60-day free trial. Here's what you do. LinkedIn.com/BTW. That's pretty cool that we have that. That's like high level URLs. Yeah. So LinkedIn.com/BTW. You're going to get a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell today. Find the hidden allies. LinkedIn.com/BTW. Thanks very much to LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Metroplex.
Yeah, no kidding.
Metroplex.
Thanks to all of that. Thank you very, very much. There's not a really good GIF of Benedict Cumberbatch saying Vatican cameos, but that's probably okay. Do you ever watch Sherlock?
Yes, I did watch it. Years ago, when it was really new, I watched it.
I was telling my kid last week, I think we need to start working on secret codes.
The three-body problem is apparently something people are watching. I watched that. I'm watching that.
Three episodes.
Expats. I watched that.
People
that
was used interesting. To be named Pat.
I watched that.
It's all people in Boston.
But we were going to talk about, we were not talking about the DOJ.
Oh.
Are we going to talk about
the rods and the water and the, and dropping the sand?
Yeah.
And putting some lead over your Johnson.
Yeah. I mean, there are things that I've read about, because I do the rabbit hole on every single one of the topics. Oh, what about the guys?
I watched all the movies. You can find them on. You can find some. If you listen to the wonderful podcast with Craig Mazin, you can learn like things that inspired him, and like you can watch like the when the guy from The Office is training people, the general guy who named all the piles. You know that guy, that actor from The Witch. You know that guy? The guy who played...
He was in that. He's got that amazing, deep baritone, scratchy voice.
To me, he will always be Chris Finch. Finchy. You know, he could throw a tea kettle over a pub. He'll always be Chris Finch to me.
That's
but
awesome.
When he named, whatever all the names of his nieces were, I guess, he named the different areas. But... And he does that talk, but what was my point about that? Oh, yeah, but you can see, like, there's a documentary on YouTube from 1980, whatever, where you can see it was, very helpful to them in making sure it was accurate to what happens right before you go out on the roof for 90 seconds. But let's tell people what this thing is if they don't know. Let's make a pitch.
So, Chernobyl. If you have not seen Chernobyl, I mean, it's an amazing show. It's incredibly, incredibly well
done. At one point,
I think
I described it as three of the best movies of the last 10 years.
Yeah. Which would those three movies be?
Well, what I mean is you can take that any way you want. I mean, I think there's a case to be made that the first few episodes of that show are some of the best TV we've had. But also, I mean, just in terms of, what are those, eight episodes? No, it's like five episodes. There's not many.
No, there really isn't.
We always get to the last one is very good, but my least favorite. But
is that the one where they sort of explain everything that happened in the court? I like that. With the plates, those cool plates. I want those plates.
They're the plates. They slide in the things to explain. Yeah. Anyway.
Who made that?
I don't know. A production design. But that's like five episodes. But it's about what happened at Chernobyl. But, and again, if you like Chernobyl and have watched it, maybe if you've even rewatched it like I have, I'll see if I can find this for notes. Chernobyl podcast. Peter Sagal interviews Craig Mazin about each episode of the show, and you learn so much about their decision making. Like, we decided we don't want people walking around doing, Boris Badenov accents. So everybody, where there's written language, it'll almost always be in Cyrillic. If there's spoken language, like in the case of the second episode when they're reading the poem, if memory serves, on air, mm-hmm. right before the lady from Synecdoche, New York, discovers, it'll be in Russian, right?
Right.
But the way people speak to each other, like, say, Death of Stalin, it's English, mostly English people with English accents.
Yes.
And several people from Game of Thrones. You got some maesters on there.
Great cast, great acting,
And Izzy Hands from Our Flag Means Death is great. The guy who talks like this, that one guy.
They did get some things wrong. But overall, it doesn't really matter. Nothing that they got wrong matters.
If you listen to the podcast, I'm not trying to cover for Craig. I call him Craig. I think there were cases where there were, you know, dramatic things done or told in a different order. But every decision that he made, he tried to like tell the bigger story. And usually he will say, well, that character, like, for example, the character I just mentioned, the, not Samantha Mathis, but the Breaking the Waves woman, you know, Emily something maybe, you know, the woman.
Yes, the woman in
Ukraine, or no, Ukraine is where they are. But, you know, when she discovers it, she opens the window.
Yes.
I think she is a composite character.
Yes, she is.
But it's about what happened at Chernobyl and the way Craig Mazin lays this down. Craig Mazin, like for most of his stuff, seems to like have like a thesis statement or a mission statement for almost everything he does. And he says very clearly that his series, Chernobyl, it's about Chernobyl, but it's really about the price of lies.
The price of lies.
Do you remember the very beginning?
Yes.
When our guy from Mad Men, they're playing the recording?
Yes.
And, oh God, it's so well done. So intense. Puts out the cat food. Oh my God. And then, every detail. Those trash cans. The trash cans, when he goes out to do his thing with the package and the trash can, mm-hmm. that's what trash cans looked like in 1989.
In the USSR at that time.
Yeah. I mean, like that's people, cool. And that's the thing is like Craig says that like one of the greatest compliments he could get is people going, oh yeah, that's exactly what the back of that truck would look like. Or that's exactly what that billboard would look like. And it's like me watching Godfather 2 and going, when Michael pulls up to Hyman Roth's house, he has a parking sticker. Or an inspection sticker on the car that he's driving. And every car in Florida used to have those inspection stickers.
Yep.
And this is in Miami. It's like they made an inspection sticker that would be on a car in 1959.
That's so cool.
Now,
I love
there's
that
one scene where there's an
detail.
ADT sticker in the background when Tom is explaining to Kay why she can't leave the compound. And I did say to my kid, do you think ADT existed in 1959?
In Russia at that time.
No. This was in Godfather.
But. Oh, in the Godfather.
Yeah. Oh, Tom Hagen. But yeah, but it's interesting because like, yeah, it's really quite upsetting and graphic, but I don't think it's exploitative. I think it does what it needs to show you the effects of what happened to the people who were there and the people who were further from there. And
well, you know, I remember as a kid living.
If you could be killed instantly, it would have been a gift. But instead,
Yeah,
this guy here, he's going to die really soon.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, all these guys get a little bit better right before they die, mm-hmm. and then they totally die. Mm-hmm. And then there's other people like Stellan Skarsgård who are going to die within the next 5 years because that's what they got exposed to. When those guys go down into the water with the flashlights, mm-hmm. oh my God.
Mm hmm.
It's a very entertaining. I think it's a very good bit of storytelling. How's your kid handling it?
Oh, he doesn't really seem to get very disturbed by that kind of thing.
Not after Logan. You took him to Logan when he was two, right?
Yeah, he's 6 months old.
precious boy.
Yeah.
All the best clinics.
Raise him right. And, you know, he's disturbed and he like goes and does research and he learned about like radiation and radiation poisoning. And he like, I'll see if I can find it. Like the most irradiated person in history is this man who was in Japan. And that's like
at
a
Fukushima?
Gruesome. I don't think he was Fukushima. I think he was before that, but I would need to read about it, but I think this was a while ago. But
Fukushima was very bad, just so you know.
Okay.
I've also watched a TV show about Fukushima and it was very, very bad.
This
and,
guy's
really
name,
almost as upsetting.
His Hisashi.
Maybe don't build your nuclear reactor right next to a bunch of water with an inadequate seawall.
Yeah, his name was Hisashi Oichi. Oichi. I'm looking to see, this was a Japanese nuclear power plant 20 years ago. He was a technician exposed to the highest levels of radiation ever suffered by a human being. I'm going to put it in the show notes.
Oh my God. How long did he live?
I mean,
he must have been burned immediately, right?
Yeah, that's not a good article. That one's not good because I can't link that one. But 83 days. He was kept alive for 83 days.
There's a lot that they did get right. Like Dyatlov was, God, how am I remembering all this? Dyatlov was kind of, he was a piece of shit, but he was kind of really set up to be the fall guy.
Yeah, no, he,
right. They were going to blame it all on the guys in the control room instead, because an RBMK cannot have a meltdown. This is known. There's no way for an, is that right, RBMK? There's no way for an RBMK reactor to have a core meltdown. It's like, when I say physically impossible, the physics of our world, because of the way this is engineered, you can't have a meltdown. And they're like, well, I just stuck my head down and the core is gone. And they're like, there's no way the core is gone.
Right.
What are you talking about? Grab a flashlight and get down there. See, it's only three Rutgens. Everything's fine.
Yeah, everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Don't you love, though, when Lane from Mad Men figures that out? That very tense first meeting where he's like, yes, but isn't it interesting that all of the... So this is not a spoiler. You get this in the first episode, but they're having a meeting with Gorbachev and all the apparatchiks or... And you know, and you but like throughout the part we're not getting at with all this talk of, you know, burns and radiation is like, it's very, very well written and well performed. And the thread that's constantly running through all of this is all of the like, especially like the CYA, every single person knows that they could become the goat for this.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
So you're always trying to pass it on to somebody below you or to a colleague, to somebody else. And we just see in this meeting where, what is that actor's name? I love him so much. Tell me his name. The guy who, two of the things I love him in, he takes his own life. his name is...
I'm looking it up.
I know his name. It's the guy from Foundation, that guy.
Yeah, I know. I got to look it
Lane
up.
Lane Becker is someone I used to work with. His name is, this is Lane from Mad Men. Lane Price, played by Jared Harris.
Jared Harris. Valery Legasov, the deputy director of the
Kurchatov and Institute. His relationship with Stellan Skarsgård, also known as Baron Harkonnen, is really good. And he, but there's that meeting where he's not used to swimming in these waters.
Right.
And he's in very, very deep waters. If there's a guy at the end of the table that has a very distinctive port wine stain on the right side of his head, mm-hmm. there's a pretty good chance that you are in deep political waters.
You don't want to sit across the table from
you know,
that
Gorbachev
guy.
Got a little bit of a pass on Chernobyl because, I think because of Glasnost. And we were like, oh, he's the good guy. Mm-hmm. Like he's, you know, but it's a meeting where he's like, yeah, well, actually this, and they're like, okay, so everything's fine. Everything's taken care of. Oh yes. Yes. Comrade. Everything's taken care of. And you comrade. Oh yeah. Oh, everything's been taken care of. This has never been so taken care of. And Jared Harris is like, wait, there's a lot of stuff here that's not adding up. So of course the immediate thing becomes contain communications. No, we're not going to evacuate anybody. All of these things, a Soviet reactor does not melt down. That would be, you know, of course, it's physically impossible, and it would be such a gift to the Americans if we said that. We don't ask for help from Germany for things, right?
Right.
But he's like...
Not great, not terrible.
All these readings, is it three Rotkins, right?
Yeah.
That all these, so there's a, I don't know exactly what that means. It's kind of like a Geiger counter, I guess, but there's some kind of a measure of radiation.
It's a measurement of ambient radiation, correct.
How's it different from what a Geiger counter does?
Well, I think that the Geiger counter
is it one of those like watts and volts and that kind of thing?
Yeah. I think a Geiger counter is identifying ionizing radiation as present, right? Mm. And you can use that. But
for our listeners, though, you could think of it like a Geiger counter, right? Where it makes a clicking noise. But he's like, yeah, but hang on. No, and he's the only like sciencey guy mm-hmm. with any integrity at the table. He's kind of new to this sort of setting. And he goes, well, all of the readings stop at three Rotkins. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, that's great. It must be contained. And he's like, but the dosimeters that we give people at these power stations, we give them a few fancy ones, but the ones that most people are using inside a place like Chernobyl top off at three.
Right, because you would... If
you
it's
had 5,000, it would still read as three.
Right. So it's almost like it's like if you take
it's
a cup of water.
It's telling you something without telling you something.
And you take the cup of water with you and you go into your swimming pool and you go into the deep end and you hold your breath and you go underwater and you're still holding the glass. you look at the glass and you say, well, this is one cup, so there must be a cup of water in here.
But oh, that's a very Alan Watts kind of thing to say. I like
that. It's a whole lot more.
Very Alan Watts.
Yeah. And yeah, that's basically what was going on. Now, we don't really measure with Röntgens anymore. We measure with sieverts. And
swear
one,
to God, Dan, if you're reading a Wikipedia
article I'm not.
I, you know I can do that, too.
I'm not doing that.
Okay.
I've been obsessed with nuclear power and nuclear warfare since I was terrified by it as a kid. And my grandfather...
The second one I've been obsessed with.
My grandfather was a metallurgist, but worked on lots of other projects and was very science minded and very also interested in nuclear power and things like that. And he and I, probably when I was about 7 years old is when this kind of started. We used to talk about this stuff all the time. So like I could bore every single person in our small listening audience with a detailed description of how an RBMK reactor is different from the other reactors we use in the West. And it's not
and just
the containment
shield. I'm not
shield.
As deep on, as Dan, you're going to be reading things like this after because it's so fascinating.
Yeah. It's so
you
fascinating.
You might find yourself trying to track those documentaries. Now me, I like to measure things in curies.
Okay,
although
yeah.
A curie is, no, I'm just saying a curie is a large unit. For something really useful, you got to have what I call a picocurie, which is 1/1,000,000,000 of a curie. And the higher that number is, the way I would explain this to a layperson is the more radiation is released by the material. Also, is it fissive material? Is it fissure material? Mm-hmm. Is it fission material? Mm-hmm. Is it fissile material? Is it the wonderful video game Fissile Command? Like, there's a lot to think about in these kinds of situations.
Right.
And also, why is there graphite in the parking lot? La, la, la. Here's
the
thing.
I can tell the difference between concrete and graphite. Thank you very much.
Isn't that a great bit, though, in the first or second act of the first episode, where it's such a wonderful introduction to what the feel of this show is, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, imagine getting called. So basically, everybody who works at what we call Chernobyl lives in this little kind of village, a few miles away, 3-4 miles away,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, Pripyat.
They can definitely see like the fire and stuff. But
oh yeah, they could see the neon or the
Jesse Buckley's husband is
glow.
A fireman.
Yeah.
The wonderful Jesse Buckley, who everybody should be watching in more things.
She was in that movie, I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
I'm Thinking
on
of Ending
Netflix.
Things. With Landry. She's with Landry.
Yeah, and at the end
and
of that movie.
And she's also in Women Talking, which is very, very
I don't want to spoil anything, but before you watch that movie, watch the last 10 minutes of A Beautiful Mind. Then watch that movie, the ending of
Not
it.
Not so beautiful anymore. But Jesse Buckley's husband is a fireman, and hey, he's got to go over to the plant and help put out a fire. Whatever, it's just a fire on the roof. Who cares?
Yeah, no big deal.
Is it he who discovers it? There's somebody, but like somebody is like, wait a minute.
Oh, who picks up and holds the chunk
of graphite?
What are
these like broken shell case? Well, so imagine like something, think of it
almost like a
round.
Still a moderator, man. Water gone, doesn't matter. It's graphite's still a moderator.
I would think of it as... in my memory anyway, it's kind of like if you found like a rounded, like broken cinder block, kind of. It's, how would you describe, I mean, it's like, but it's like, it looks like a broken casing from something.
Yeah, like a little.
But the person's like, wait a minute, this is graphite.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, it's graphite. Let's put the fire out. And you're like, hang on, dude. There's only one place within miles of here that graphite like this exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the middle of the reactor at the core.
Right.
It's what the rods go through, but right, but it's graphite. Is that what the rods are made of?
Well, so there's graphite on the end. They used a different kind of control rod to control.
They're putting it in. They're pulling
the
it out. They're running tests.
Than most other reactors would use, and so most reactors just have the control rod containing...
Oh, you've been doing your homework on this, Dan. I'm impressed.
I don't want to bore the audience, but you can read about this. Mm. But basically, they had. Around these different rods, they had these pieces of graphite to act as moderators. And yeah, that's what they found all around, because the only, like you were saying, the only place that these things exist are inside the core where they should stay. And if they had concrete blast shields, they would have stayed inside of all of that. But they didn't, because it's expensive to make that.
And which is a wonderful bit of storytelling that I think is based on true things. But here's all of that stuff is incredible and like very well done. All of the stuff about the opera, I won't get into it because even though it's a historical event, you probably don't. I'll say I was 19 when this happened, and I didn't know this stuff my entire life.
Right.
But like the way that they try to address this problem is fascinating and courageous and insane and sometimes beyond irrational. Like, it's just that, like, you know, but this is where we get into, like, at least what we were taught about the Soviet Union and other. I mean, when you did you start Three Body Problem yet?
I'm a couple episodes in.
Okay, but like, you remember the first scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, they're in some of these authoritarian cultures, like a big part of it is like, you have to go out in public and say that you're an idiot and that you did something wrong, and everybody else should look at you and yell and shake the book at you and declare that you should be killed, right? Because that's part of what an authoritarian... There's a thing that one realizes over time, especially if you watch a lot of Hitler documentaries. A big part of power for anybody with power is not merely the ability to exercise power and have people do what you want. It's to be able to do seemingly very arbitrary things that nobody's allowed to say no to. That's what real power... Real power is what's going on in, you know, Berlin in 1939. Real power is what's going on in Inner Mongolia during the, you know, Cultural Revolution and the Great Leap Forward, right? It's what happens on Truth Social when somebody says something that everybody knows is not true, and yet it's more important that you agree than figure out whether it's accurate, right? That's the amazing thing. All the stuff with the hospital, all the stuff. Jesse Buckley's character, isn't she terrific in this?
Everyone is terrific in this movie.
But like, there's this, it's not just like all the sad stuff, the gross stuff. It's not, there's also just the operational stuff of like, there's this through the middle episodes of this show. Again, no spoilers, but like the person power and resources that are called in to do a job. Oh God, the interiors also are so beautifully done, the production design. But like through those, but like there's a thread that runs through this, which is like, oh my God, you know, the stuff you knew about Chernobyl, most of us knew, which is, oh my gosh, this was really bad, something nuclear. Well, let's put some meat on that bone, which is that like there are a number of interesting things that caused this to happen. And again, no spoilers, but like it has to do with stuff like a guy wants to get promoted because he finished a safety test on time. Well, actually, you picked a really bad day. We have to do the test. Wasn't that how it worked? We have to do the test like by tomorrow to get credit for this and get my promotion. But like, there's also other stuff happening at that same time. And that test, the thing nobody knew,
right.
And correct me, Dan, but no, what nobody
right.
knew was like there, I guess it's an edge case, but apparently it wasn't that much of an edge case. But there's a situation in which you could do what you think is the right thing to do, read all the meters correctly, follow the manual flawlessly, and still something could happen that could lead to a series of events that's almost completely unexpected. And even though it's unexpected and it happens, this is where it becomes the TV show Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
It can still never be acknowledged, addressed, ameliorated, or corrected because there was never a problem.
Right.
That's what this show is really about, the cost of lies. So he doesn't get grossed out by stuff. Is he following this? Oh, did you know Barry Keogh?
Thing I just want to say.
Barry Keogh's in this.
Yeah, but one thing I want to say. Okay,
yes.
And this is for anyone who hasn't seen this and wants to watch it, or anyone who thinks back.
If you've already seen it, don't listen to this. This is just for people who haven't seen it.
It's fine. It's fine for everyone.
Okay.
Radiation. And I want to say this because I've studied radiation a lot, and is this a fact? You can Google this. You can talk to people.
Okay.
Radiation is not contagious. There was no reason for people to be separated or isolated from the people who had been exposed to gamma radiation.
What about their clothes?
The clothes could have been covered in radioactive dust and should have been removed and disposed of and not touched.
Putting them all in a pile that everybody has
in the basement,
access to
was not a great idea.
Yeah.
But so let's say that somebody that you know goes in for some kind of radiation treatment for cancer or something like that. The person is not radioactive. Let's say that somebody is unfortunate enough to have been exposed in Fukushima or Chernobyl to the core or to something like that. They would take their clothes and dispose of them properly. They would basically take a shower and scrub themselves. They are not radioactive anymore. They have been exposed to radiation and might be sick and die from it, but they are not a risk to you or to your unborn baby or any of that.
It's not like, I mean, just to distinguish, it's not like measles.
It's not contagious.
You get exposed to measles, and I think measles is like this. They say it's the most communicable disease that's yes. still around. But like you could get somebody, like typhoid, right? You could get somebody sick with measles before you even know you have measles.
You could.
It's not that.
You could.
Right?
No. If you yeah. were unfortunate, let's say that an atomic nuclear type weapon went off and you were within a vicinity and there was some fallout and the fallout landed on your clothes and you didn't know that. Anybody that you were around that touched you or breathed in that dust, including you, would be exposed to radiation. That's different than what we're talking about.
It's not your body, though.
Now, if you consume...
You're not coughing on people and making them radioactive.
No. Now, the only exception to what I've said is, if you somehow, unfortunately, consumed something that was radioactive, for example, if you ate something that was radioactive and swallowed it, or you breathed in a massive amount and it was stuck in your lungs.
You ate a chicken that had been, you know, like there's that wonderful shot when the bird falls out of the sky at the end of that one
episode. You ate that bird, would you be radioactive? No, because the bird was irradiated.
Dan Benjamin says eat all the radioactive chickens you want.
Yeah, a person who's been exposed to ionizing radiation is not dangerous to other people once they've been decontaminated with whatever radioactive material was on them. And so this is a fairly widespread misunderstanding. You don't need to bury someone in a lead coffin under cement because they were exposed to ionizing radiation. That's not the concern. Now, if there was a nuclear war... And you were down in your bunker and you were safe. And someone was wandering around upstairs and they're like, Merlin, let me in. I'm still alive out here. I've got cans of food. Uh-huh. Let me in. Could you eat the food in the cans?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think?
Me?
Yeah.
The food
would
in
that
cans,
be safe?
I think so first of all, I want to do some kind of a check, and I might use the code word at this point. I'd say Vatican cameos, because I want to make sure that's the person I think it is and that they haven't been transformed by radiation into some kind of a...
Is it a hidden ally up there?
Is it a hidden ally, uh-huh. or is it a close number?
Right.
Now, the cans. He hates these cans. I'm going to say the food was unirradiated when it went into the can.
Yeah, correct? Let's say the can, yes.
I think the food is fine.
I think the food is fine too.
But what about your friend? You let him in? Or you have him eat it first?
You know why you don't let him in?
Like a taster for the king.
Because
he's got on his clothes and stuff.
He's been traipsing around and getting covered with alpha particles, which are radioactive and all over his clothes. He's been breathing them in. They're in his hair. They're in everything. You don't want to be around
an alpha male.
You don't want to be around that.
Don't want to be around him.
But... To the guy who just looked into the core of Chernobyl in the helicopter, who was flying over it and got a full dose of radiation, and he steps out of the helicopter, is he okay to be around?
No.
He is okay to be around from your
Damn
standpoint.
It. What if he's in a can? What if he's in a can?
But you shouldn't be around him because his immune system has just been destroyed. Oh. And you are carrying germs that will go into him and will eat him from the inside out.
This is a complex message to relate to the people, to the proletariat. This is a very complex message.
The pros.
You're better off just to say stay inside and don't eat cans.
That's true. You have a Geiger counter on you right now, right?
I mean,
you wear a dosimeter around town and you carry the Geiger in your backpack, right?
I do RADs, which as you know is like joules per kilogram or sometimes
instead of burpees, you do RADs.
You got one REM is 0.1 sieverts or SV, as I say. Uh-huh. SVU, like whatever it takes. But my point to you is you should all watch this. You should listen to the podcast, which I'll try to remember to put in notes. And you should also listen to my playlist, which include a playlist that will introduce you or, saliently, reintroduce you to a band called The Police. Shut up. The whole point of this is I'm going to get you pumped about The Police and it's not synchronicity.
Right.
And it begins with a song called Fallout. So do you see how it's all connected, Dan?
I got it. I've got it.
You got alpha, beta, gamma, and then et cetera radiation.
Right.
Organ sensitivity. Colon. Stomach, lungs, effective dose. I've added a link to show notes for this episode where you can find what the Environmental Protection Agency says.
The thing is, like, radiation, the reason why that whole area around Chernobyl is quarantined is because all of the smoke that was coming out of Chernobyl contained these particles that were heavily irradiated that were then dispersed over a very, 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 very wide area.
I mean, it made it to Nordic countries.
Yeah,
and they couldn't keep it part of this. And you're way more interested in the science than I am, which is awesome. But what this means in practicality is, so this is in Ukraine, right?
Yes.
And where is the, anyway, but across the Soviet Union, they're seeing readings like when they open their window. Like, so that's, there's a wonderful scene where when you open a window in a different part of the Soviet Union,
right,
your decimeter or whatever starts going off. It's like, well, maybe we should close that window.
Yeah.
And then you can't keep it a secret, especially by the time it gets to, was it Sweden? Like, hadn't it reached like Finland or Sweden?
Yeah.
Or
Belarus. Oh my God. They got the worst.
You could probably do a whole webinar on how to protect yourself from radiation.
Yeah, you could. And I mean, one thing,
get canned with Dan.
Like the one actress, the one who is, what did you call her? A homunculus? A composite?
Yeah, that's what I called her. What is her name? She's
great
the one,
actress.
She's the ticket. So I think she's in the pool, a pond, in Minority Report.
Pond,
and I'm pretty sure she's the ticket taker in Synecdoche, New York. And is it Samantha Mathis? Or is that the...
Wait a second. She's the one... She was in the pool?
She's the
Oh my God, you're right. Oh my God, I just made that connection.
Isn't that insane?
Oh my God.
Not okay. Samantha Mathis. I think it's Samantha Moore.
So she's right away, New York. You know, she's like on top of it. And then one of the nurses is like, y'all have any iodine? And she's like giving it to her secretary. She's like, you take one of these every day. And it's like, basically.
Don't you love when they're speaking in code over the phone?
Oh, that's the best.
They're talking. So like these two women are like, they realize the call is being monitored and they're trying to talk about levels of different elements.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're using numbers from the period. So it's so
funny. Isn't that cool? So
great story. I'm sorry.
So the thing about iodine,
because I want to leave. I apologize.
Iodine.
Yeah.
Is.
Or iodine, as you say.
Iodine. Everyone should still have this, but no one has it anymore. But basically, they make iodine pills.
What about mercurochrome, Dan? Can I use mercurochrome?
No, you want to use iodine because the way that this works is the human body absorbs iodine in the diet. It's from like salt and fish. And other things like that. But your body cannot tell the difference between what they call dietary iodine, which you're going to get if you eat some fish, and radioactive iodine. So it absorbs it the same way. And
you're tricking the system. That's smart.
And kids are at high risk because like their thyroid glands are like going crazy. They're like a sponge for iodine. So when you take iodine pills, you're basically flooding your body with more iodine than it can process, and that prevents it from absorbing the radioactive iodine because you're already maxed out.
I wonder how you discover something like that. Isn't that wild?
It is wild, but science.
Science has helped a lot of people, but you know, it's what have you done for me lately, science?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should check in with the Supreme Court. Dan, I want to leave. Can I leave?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, thank you very much to everybody for listening. We're going to button this up. I love you.
Love you too, Merlin, man.